Chapter 64. I woke up at 7 and let the Department of the Army buy me a room service breakfast. By 8, I was showered and dressed and out on the street. I figured this was when the serious business would begin. A noon appointment at the Pentagon for a guy based as far away as I was made it likely I would have stayed in town the night before, and Washington hotels were easily monitored. It was that kind of a city, and I wasn't hiding my light under any kind of small barrels. So I half expected opposition in the lobby, or right outside the street door. I found it in neither place. It was a fresh spring morning, the sun was out, the air was warm, and everything I saw was benign and innocent. I made a show of strolling out to a newspaper kiosk, even though the hotel supplied publications of every type. I bought a Post and a Times, and I lingered and loitered over making change, all slow and unconcerned. But there was no approach and no attack. I carried the papers to a coffee shop and sat at an outside table in full view of the whole world. No one looked at me. By 10 o'clock, I was full of coffee and had read the ink off both broadsheets, and no passerby had shown any interest in me. I began to think I had outsmarted myself with my choice of hotel. A transient 04 would normally stay in a different kind of place, of which there were simply too many to call. So I began to think it likely the opposition would be focusing on the end of my journey, not a stop along the way, which would be more efficient for them anyway. They knew exactly where I was going and exactly when, which meant they would be waiting for me in or around the Pentagon at or before 12 o'clock. The belly of the beast, much more dangerous. Less than 3 miles away, but a different planet in terms of how they would do things. It was still a beautiful morning, so I walked. Any day could be the last of life or liberty, so small pleasures were always worth pursuing. I went south on 17th Street, past the executive office building next to the White House, down the side of the Ellipse and onto the Mall. I turned away from George Washington's monument and headed for Abraham Lincoln's. I looped left of the old guy and found my way onto the Arlington Memorial Bridge and stepped out over the broad waters of the Potomac. Plenty of people were making the same trip by car. No one else was doing it on foot. The morning joggers were long gone, and the afternoon joggers were still at work. I stopped halfway across and leaned on the rail. Always a wise precaution on a bridge. Nowhere for a follower to hide. They had to keep on coming. But there was no one behind me. No one ahead of me either. I gave it 5 minutes, resting on my elbows like a contemplative soul. But no one came. So I moved on again, another 300 yards, and I arrived in Virginia. Straight ahead of me in the distance was Arlington National Cemetery, the main gate. I was there 5 minutes later. I walked into the sea of white stones. Immediately, there were graves all around me. Always the best way to approach the Department of Defense, through the graveyard, for purposes of perspective. I detoured once to pay my respects to JFK, and again to pay my respects to the unknown soldier. I walked behind Henderson Hall, which was a high-level Marine place, and I came out the cemetery's south gate, and there it was, the Pentagon, the world's largest office building, 6.5 million square feet, 30,000 people, more than 17 miles of corridors, but just 3 street doors. Naturally, I wanted the southeast entrance, for obvious reasons. So I looped around, staying alert, keeping my distance, until I was able to join the thin stream of people coming in from the metro station. The stream got thicker as it funneled toward the doors. It turned out to be a decent crowd, the right kind of people for my particular purposes. I wanted witnesses. Arrests go bad all the time, sometimes accidentally, sometimes on purpose. But I got in okay, despite the little uncertainty in the lobby. What I thought was an arrest team turned out to be a new watch coming on duty, a temporary manpower surplus. That was all. So I made it to 3C315 unmolested. Third floor, C-ring, nearest to radial corridor number 3, bay number 15. John James Fraser's office, Senate liaison. There was no one in there with him. He was all alone. He told me to close the door. I did. He told me to sit down. I did. He said, "So, what have you got for me?" I said nothing. I had nothing to say. I hadn't expected to get that far. He said, "Good news, I hope." "No news," I said. "You told me you had the name. That's what your message said." "I don't have the name." "Then why say so? Why ask to see me?" I paused a beat. "It was a shortcut," I said. And right there, the meeting died on its feet. There was really nothing more to say. Fraser put on a big show of being tolerant and patient. He called me paranoid. Then he laughed a little about how I couldn't even get arrested. Then he tried to look concerned about my state of health, maybe, and certainly about my appearance, the hair and the stubble. He put on the kind of brusque and manly voice an uncle uses with a favorite nephew. He said, "You look terrible. There are barbershops here, you know. You should go use one." "I can't," I said. "I'm supposed to look like this."
"Because of the undercover role?"
"Yes."
"But you're not really undercover, are you? I heard the local sheriff rumbled you immediately."
I think it's worth continuing for the general population. The army is not real popular with them at the moment.
"Anyway, I expect you'll be withdrawn now. In fact, I'm surprised you haven't been withdrawn already. When did you last get orders?"
"Why would I be withdrawn?"
"Because matters appear to be resolved in Mississippi."
"Do they?"
"I think so. The shootings outside of Kellam were clearly a case of an excess of zeal from an unofficial and unauthorized paramilitary force from another state. The authorities in Tennessee will take care of all that. We can't really stand in their way. Our powers are limited."
"They were ordered there."
"No, I don't really think so. Those groups have extensive underground communications. We think it will prove to be a civilian initiative."
"I don't agree."
"This is not debate class. Facts are facts. This country's overrun with groups like that. Their agendas are decided internally. There's really no doubt about that."
"What about the 3 dead women?"
"The perpetrator has been identified, I believe."
"When?"
"The news became public 3 hours ago, I think."
"Who is it?"
"I don't have all the details."
"One of ours?"
"No, I believe it was a local person down there in Mississippi."
I said nothing.
Fraser said, "Anyway, thank you for coming in."
I said nothing.
Fraser said, "This meeting is over, Major."
I said, "No, Colonel, it isn't."